and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shay Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Investment advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management Incorporated, member FINRA SIPC. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and the opinions given are for informational purposes only and are not intended as financial, tax, accounting, or legal advice, and are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their individual needs with an appropriate professional.
And welcome back to New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580, 10 after the hour here on a Thursday. The gang is all here from Prout Financial Design, starring Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner. Good morning, sir.
It is great to be here, Ron. A total veteran of the radio waves. Hey, sir, Ron Jolly, it's a pleasure to be here.
And you've been at this for how long?
I'm kind of looking to Shay for that. I don't know, 16,
wait, wait, Shay,
15,
hold on there.
16 years.
Hello. Shay,
hello.
Yes, I'm in the back section over here. What I like about the new studio, though, is I have my own controls.
Yes, you
do. It's really fun. Anyway, we keep trying to paint the picture for the audience as to how nice and luxurious this is.
Shay has the most comfortable seat.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
You betcha.
How long have you been doing the radio show? Well, let's see. I've been with you 15 years in January. I started the radio show in 2012, and you were doing it in 2007 when I started. So over 15 years.
Wow.
Because you were already
well into it.
Well into
I
it
think
then.
It was 05, 06. I started with Norm Jones.
Wow,
actually, when the key is whenever he started his show, that's when I started with him because he asked you guys to get a financial guy. And I had already spoken to a few of the leadership here at TCM.
Oh, nine maybe? I don't know. But we are going to have an exchange program. Now, Dennis and the gang come in and do a show once a week. I'll be coming down and consulting some of your clients once a week.
Hey, just Ron, we could do it together.
Yeah.
That could be real fun.
Look of sheer terror on Dennis's face.
I'm not even sure I know what that means. So tell me, what exactly are we thinking here?
Come in for a free consultation. Yeah, do as I say, not as I do.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we do have chocolate at the office still. Let's see, what else have we? We have coffee.
We've added caramels to the mix, which are a big hit.
Oh, crazy. Well, it's great to be here. We've got a group here this morning. First of all, thank you for listening. Thursday morning, November 18th, and we've been teaching retirement planning today. Just finished the second class of the second part of the second class this recent Tuesday, Heidi.
That's correct.
And Heidi Thompson joins us too, our managing executive, retirement income certified professional, RICP. Welcome, Heidi.
Thank you. Good morning to everyone.
Pleasure to have you here with us.
Thanks.
As well, of course, Shay has already introduced herself, kind of. She'll be doing the stats here today, too.
Yes, we'll do Shay stats.
Our CXO, Chief Experience Officer, and there in the corner, very distinguished-looking young man. Hello, John Sluice.
Well, hello there.
John Sluice, CPA, InTrust CPA. CPA company there on Hanna Avenue. Hanna, right off of Woodmere, kind of across from the library. And known and trusted by many folks here in the Traverse City area, referred to us several years ago, and a very good referral indeed. There's somebody who can handle taxes to the significant degree.
Well-oiled
machine there at InTrust, and your phone number there is 231-935-1590 for those who might care to call you and or your company after the show. Now, we're going to be talking today about charitable gifting, and obviously, we're only, 6 weeks or so before the end of the year, so the heat goes up a bit. What should we do yet for this year? What could we do? What can we? What should we? All key components, but you had said something in the midst of our conversation. In essence, you were saying, John, talking versus doing, two very different components that you see often in your practice. So if you could expand on what you meant by that. Sure.
Yeah, so it's going to come a couple different ways. The first one here is we're talking charitable donations right now and contributions. It's the typical type of discussion that we're going to have year end. It's up there. We're thinking about it. But so often you hear it, you think about it, like, yeah, I should do that. But then the holidays roll around, Thanksgiving comes, you got to make the turkey, you got to do this. And then, oh, wait a sec, I got the choir concert, then I've got to go for Christmas. And oops, year end's over, too late. Now I'm not going to think about it. Life happens. Life right. happens so often for people that they hear this, we do this, that it. We talk about it, we know it, but we don't do it. That's one of the most common things. And especially when you start talking about things that might be a little bit unknown or foreign, we start using acronyms here. We start using things and you're like, oh yeah, that's intriguing, that's interesting. But it takes an extra step of having to actually ask for the assistance with it, to calculate it. We might say, well, let's put in a specific contribution through a specific QCD or something along those lines. But it actually means needing to ask for the help or actually calculating something. So you get it, you want to do it, but now you actually have to take the step and do it, which means you have to actually write the check or you have to make the phone call or you have to do what you want to do. And so often there's that disconnect there that we want to do it, but we don't actually do it.
That's where the rubber really hits the road, isn't it? Is actually writing the stinking check. It's not always easy to do. Mm-hmm. Are we charitably minded, number one? Mm-hmm. Is there an organization locally that we might want to give to, whether it's Munson or the Land Conservancy or Father Fred? We get that, oh my gosh, the community groups here that are counseling, Munson Medical Center at Code Red, there is a lot of stress out there. So I think most people get it that the stress level is through the roof, and if we could help an organization charitably, now could be the significant time to do it. So it's not just about the deduction. Mm-hmm. It's about how can I help? Mm-hmm. So extending yourself into that situation perhaps, actually getting out the checkbook.
Well, and you're using the example of getting out the checkbook, but that's for the probably the easiest one and how difficult that is. We're going to get some more complicated ones later in the show here of utilizing appreciated stock or utilizing donor advised funds or all these different strategies.
Yes.
Those are even further down the road as far as difficulty of just getting out the check and writing it. So yes, that is the key.
Often you use the example, many times it takes us 2 to 3 years mm-hmm. to get going in that, but we want to begin to plant the seeds here. Even if it takes you a year or two, perhaps, to get going on this, but understanding the significance of what you might do this year. Now, you also alluded to talking about starting at the beginning of 22, which can be the QCD, the Qualified Charitable Deduction or Distribution. It gets several monikers with it. But the QCD, out of your IRA, starting in 22, so you begin it in the beginning of the year. Now, many people can still do that. They still have time. But describe what that is, the QCD. We've talked about it here. From your standpoint, the tax standpoint.
Yeah, from a tax standpoint, the QCD, which is Qualified Charitable Donation or Deduction, like you said, it takes many roles, it's coming straight from your IRA. So it's specifically from your RMD, so your required minimum distribution. And so the benefit of doing it, especially nowadays when most individuals are utilizing the standard deduction, so they don't necessarily feel the benefit of a charitable contribution, that it completely avoids income. And so you don't get a deduction, but it's because you don't have income. So it truly is a fantastic benefit for those that utilize it.
It's way better. It's much better than most of us are going to get, because almost everyone out there is just taking the standard deduction. So because you can't itemize, that income that you're taking from your IRA is almost always going to be 100% taxable. Given the reality of that, give it indirectly by taking a part of your RMD, required minimum distribution, and giving it direct to your church or other charitable organization. It is a 501c3, to be sure, organization.
Yep. And they're bringing it back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show here, was that oftentimes I hear, we'll talk about this, I'll mention it with my clients, and it sounds good. And it typically is right around now during tax planning season and charitable giving season. They go to the financial advisor, and the financial advisor says, well, you know what, we've already utilized the RMD this year, so it's too late, can't do it. And the individual, that's if they actually did make the phone call to talk to the financial advisor, says, yeah, okay, well, we'll deal with it later. So what you need to hear right now is to think ahead, and if you're thinking of the QCD, make the plan, and maybe you're not doing it for December 31st, 2021. You're going to do it for January 1st, 2022. And so you're going to think about it today to think ahead for 2022.
And right, we have a fair number of clients that do that at the beginning of the year. Isn't that correct, Heidi?
Yes, that is correct. And one of those reasons is because the first money out in any given year from your IRA is counted towards that RMD. So if you're looking to offset that mandatory distribution, you want to do your QCD early.
Correct.
Yep. And I mean, obviously, this is some of the best work you're going to do as an individual.
And again, there's where it takes a little bit of the foresight and the planning. And what yes, we were talking about beforehand is actually hearing it and then doing it and then acting upon it. And especially when we start talking about charitable giving, because, you know, Dennis, you and I were talking before the show on this year, there's a specific exemption out there that allows for individuals to donate 100% of their AGI, which sounds really cool and is really exciting. And that's there. So if you're an individual that's going to donate 100% of your AGI, you get to do it this year. Kudos. Now, practically speaking, the likelihood that anyone or many individuals are going to donate 100% of their AGI is probably pretty rare. Maybe Mother Teresa, possibly.
Right. But or if they've had significant other assets somehow liquid, possibly they might get to that level. But to keep in mind, normally it's up to 60% of AGI this year because of the CARES Act. Yep. It is 100%. Yep. So for a few, that could be a big benefit.
It can be. And, yeah, and where I was going with this is that it can be a huge benefit, but it's one that if you are going to donate 100% of your AGI, it's not something that you take lightly. It's something that you've thought about and you've planned for and you've made right, this decision early on and thought through. And so there's, if I come back at it, is that any of these discussions that we're talking about, whether it's a QCD, whether a donor advised fund, land conservate, like on a donation of rights, any of those, you got to think ahead and you got to make it part of your plan, because that's really where the benefit happens, is when you're looking at it from a plan point of view.
You, in essence, what you're saying is you got to have these conversations with your tax advisor and or your financial advisor too. Mm-hmm. And frankly, you have to parse what their interests are and their bents, B-E-N-T-S, are as well.
Right. And your spouse or yourself and your others, because it's going to mean that you're going to actually have to move. I know, imagine that. Talk about financial items. With
and your children.
Daddy, right, you're going to give all that money to charity. Yes. How much are you giving to me? Yeah. You know, the charity that's most important in my life.
These are not life, single people problems, by the way. Yes,
it's always the family, isn't it? It's crazy.
So this has ramifications for others. You mentioned it. Usually this discussion goes hand in hand with gifts to families, because if you're not inheritance, if you're giving to charities, you're not giving to inheritance, and so those have to have discussions. You have to think about those and plan for those and have the consensus across the board.
Yes, indeed. Yes, I see that hand.
What's the what are the logistics of the QCD to charity? I think you've emphasized before, you don't want to take the money and then donate it because you lose on the tax break. It has to go direct. Is that as simple as calling your financial advisor and say, hey, send the check to Father Fred this year?
Yes, in many cases it is. Now, you can also possibly have the check sent to you. That's an option with many of these custodians, but it has to be made payable to Father Fred, the Father Fred Foundation. All right. So you can deliver direct to them if you want to, or have it sent to them. But you're not going to get... Now, let's talk about the tax reporting on that, John, which is key.
There is none.
Say that again.
There is
none.
Wow.
Thank you.
because nothing happened. And so it's one of those hard things. So if you do a QCD, make sure you talk to your tax accountant and say and let them know that you did do this.
Because otherwise, the 1099 is going to make it look like you made a distribution to yourself.
Correct.
So in this case, you've had an incorrect 1099 issued, and you could wind up declaring income that's all income. And what do we do at Prout Financial Design, Heidi? Yeah.
Well, we actually send a letter to our clients in January saying, hey, last year you made the following QCDs. It's something they can hand directly to their accountant and say, here's what I did, so that when they are figuring all those numbers out, they can take that into account.
Right. And one little quick change there is the 1099 is not incorrect. It's correct. They just take the little box that says taxable undetermined, and they leave it up to you and your tax advisor to actually ask questions.
Okay, so thank you. Yes. John clarifies. It's not incorrect, but you could wind up paying incorrect amount of tax.
Over tax. We don't want to do
over tax.
And we certainly do not want to tip the government.
See, that's why I have all these people checking me around, man.
There's your next ad
that's
campaign.
That's why I always go to the question for other people, because people know it intuitively. Did Dennis get all the details there when he said that particular thing? No, I'm not sure he did. So this is fantastic. Now, before we go to our break, we also want to discuss one more thing. I want to bring this up briefly. Give appreciated non-cash assets instead of cash. Appreciated assets, give them. Now, what does that mean?
This is my most favorite way to give charitably. I know I'm in a room with financial advisors, and so they love QCDs.
It's my second favorite. Right. Yeah. Yes, it's John's first.
This is my favorite one, which is appreciated stock. It is so underutilized. It is fairly straightforward. But instead of giving a check, so you use the example, you're going to write a check to the donation or to your charity organization. Instead, you give stock. So let's use the example. Mm. Grandma gave you some Dow chemical or some McDonald's stock when you were 2 years
old. Or J.P. Morgan
whatever it is, gave it to you when you were 2 years old as a birthday present. So you have a basis of a dollar, let's say. Well, it's now worth $60. One scenario is you sell that $60, you pay taxes on it, and then you get the deduction. The alternative.
So you get the deduction when you give the proceeds of that. You write out the check then to the charity.
So then you're... Yep. If you write the check to the charity in that case, you've recognized a sale, you pay tax on that sale, and sure you get a deduction, but you paid tax on the sale. Alternatively, you just give the stock to the charity. They then sell it. They get the cash, they end up in the same spot, but because you didn't sell anything, you don't recognize the gain. And here's the and, not or, and you also get the deduction. So you don't pay the tax. And you get the deduction.
That's pretty nifty.
Boom. Yeah.
So actually,
that's
in this example
excited.
Here, oh my gosh.
This is where Shay is over in the corner just laughing at us.
I am.
So because I just go, boom, mic
in
drop.
This example.
No, they're brand new. Please don't drop them. They're brand new.
I interject too quickly, but in this example here, a gift of $50,000 makes approximately $6,000 to $8,000 more in net tax advantage to this person giving stock versus having written out the check. Mm-hmm. So it can be significant in terms of real tax savings, mm-hmm. giving the stock directly, appreciated stock. Mm-hmm. Now, does it have to be appreciated stock, John?
It does not have to be appreciated. You're going to have less value for doing it, but you can certainly give stock. So if you have stocks in your portfolio you want to give, that certainly is an option.
Yeah. What I meant by that was, are there other appreciated assets that one could give?
Yeah. I mean, you could give art pieces. You can give houses. You can give anything that's appreciated.
But you have to get an independent then appraisal of that asset if it's not valued according to a market price.
If you want to hear me get really, really excited, let's talk about giving shares of your closely held corporation. That's a stock. Now that takes valuations and takes other things like that. And that is, I get really, really excited.
We just went into the Ethereum there.
We did.
Oh my gosh, I just saw your eyes cross in glee there. So, Ron, we should take a break, shall we? And we'll come back.
Quick question on the text line. Should be an easy one before.
Yeah.
Is the contribution of a QCD considered on the date the check was written or the date the check was given to the charity?
When the custodian cuts the check, okay, let's say it's 12/20,
yep,
that's the date that you use, mm-hmm, all right?
All right.
So 12/20/21, that means we're safe.
Got it. Thank Question you. On the text line, sure. 457s cannot be used for QCDs, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Only the IRA can be used as a QCD.
No. And a follow-up says, I understand that I can convert mine, I guess 457, to an IRA if I want to.
You can roll it, given that you no longer work with the company, and or you have an in-service distribution option on that 457. Some allow that. So whether you're retired, let go early, there are several key components or events that allows you to roll funds, part or all, to an IRA. But you want to consult with a properly qualified financial advisor and, frankly, call the company. Call the company and ask them what your options are. And generally, you want somebody else in on that conversation who can ask those key questions as well, perhaps. Okay?
Okay.
Now, so let's go next into the charitable... family giving. Is that
what giving.
Okay, so we're switching from charity to family. And we wanted to talk specifically about this $15,000 gift limit that's in people's minds. It is real, but let's talk more deeply about that. So normally, let's say Susan and John each give $15,000 to their daughter each year, which is really quite generous. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that, why they're doing that, and the benefit to them of having done that, John, mm-hmm, please.
Yeah, so the benefit we're talking about here is we're talking about is gifting dollars to the next generation. The reason you're going to gift, so this isn't charitable contributions.
It's not a
charitable deduction. It's mm-hmm gifting between generations or gifting to other individuals. You're giving a gift. Gifts themselves are not taxable to the recipient, because they're not deductible to the giver.
That's so important. They're not going to pay any tax.
Correct.
And neither, you're not going to get a deduction for having given it. That's
and I
the
start
first
that because
mis-
that, it is a huge misconception. I get calls all the time that says, well, I got a gift. My parents gave me some dollars or whatever, or my grandma did or anything. And I want to kind of distill that is that when you're receiving a gift, it is not taxable to you. Likewise, it's not deductible to the giver. That's the way to think of it. Is the IRS, it's a big balance, right? If you think about, you know, the justice idea of the balance. So the IRS looks at it and says, okay, if you get a deduction, someone else in the grand scheme of things has income. Vice versa, if you have income, someone else has a deduction. That's the way to look at it. And so with a gift, this is not of a charitable donation, this is a gift, the giver does not get a deduction. Likewise, the receiver does not have income.
Now, let's go directly then. Let's just say it's a Susan that gives to her daughter, mm-hmm, and she wants to give more than $15,000. I've had so many clients say, well, won't I have to owe a bunch of gift tax if I do that? Describe. Let's say Susan, in this case, wants to give $25,000 to her daughter. What would that look like?
They currently would not have to give or pay taxes. So you're hitting on another... common question is they assume that they're going to pay taxes. Generally speaking, and I would say generally, I'm going to make up a number, 99% of the time, they are not going to pay taxes. So in today's tax regime, the gift tax is mirrored with the estate tax.
The estate tax equivalent, which is how much?
Currently is, I'm at around $5.5 million per person doubled to 11. So there's the key on it is that, yes, it has potential to be, but the likelihood of anyone ever paying any taxes on that is so small in today's day and age with the caveats, asterisks, and all those fun jazz.
But you said the limit's $15,000, and if Susan gave $25,000, why wouldn't they pay tax on that extra $10,000?
The limit of non-reporting to the government is $15,000. So why they did this is let's picture, because in theory, grandma gives you a $10 gift for your birthday. Yeah. In theory, that would have to be reportable. So the government came through and set, what's the limit where they don't care? They don't want to be notified. They don't want to know. Mm. It's not even worth them hearing it because they don't want to get told every time grandma gives a $10 gift for birthdays. Yeah. And so that threshold of not reporting is 15,000. And so a lot of people assume that anything above 15, and I'm going to make a little caveat, in 2022 it goes to 16, so the first time in a long time it increases to 16,000. But right now I'm using 15, so that 15,000 is the threshold where you don't have to report that you gave a gift.
Wow.
It could be right currently as high as $11 million.
It's $11.7 million.
Yeah, so I tend to round, but yeah, it's 11.7.
That's the per person amount.
Correct.
So in essence, a couple could double that sum. We're talking in the stratosphere for most people. Most people do not even need to think about that.
Correct.
But seriously, that 11.7, they can simply form a... file that form 709 if they've given more than the 15,000, but they're not going to owe the tax on it.
Correct.
It's not going to be taxable for the person giving and or the person having received that sum.
Because what you're essentially doing, the way to think of this is anything above that is reportable, is it's just being deducted off of your $11.7 million standard deduction. Think of it that way.
Which can be a great thing, taking advantage of it now, perhaps.
Right. So if you give $100,000, if you're going to give $100,000 cash, the giver doesn't pay any taxes. The receiver doesn't receive any tax or pay any taxes. And what happens is instead of being able to give when you pass away $11.7 million, you can give $11.6 million. That's all that's happening. Now, it came into light and so important for so many people because back in the day, and I'm just going to say back in the day, it was $350,000 or $500,000. That limit was a lot.
The
estate tax and the gift tax. So they get lumped together, but they are separate taxes. It was so low. So when it was at $500,000, you really had to be careful about that. So you really had to strategize. Okay, I'm going to think ahead. I'm going to do $15,000 per person per year and do all those things. And those are all good things to do. But so often people assume that they can't give more than that without having taxes due. And that's not true. And the gift return is not a complicated return, especially if it's cash. Because the complication with a gift return is not the return itself. It's how do you value the underlying gift. So if you're going to give land, you have to get an appraisal. If you're going to give the, Mona Lisa or something along those lines, you have to get it valued. So you have to get an appraisal. There's the complication. If you're giving cash, well, we know what cash is worth. If you're giving stock, we know what stock is worth. And so it's not a complicated item. It's just a form that you fill and you're done. Right.
Well, I think though the Mona Lisa will put you over that $11 million.
It might, yes.
I think
possibly. Very possible.
Just wanted to point that out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you for that.
Point. Yeah. She's rather pretty when it comes to the value of said painting. So what's interesting about this is the misconception again about that gift tax. It's basically a non sequitur. It's non-existent.
Yeah.
For most of the populace. Now, they've taken full advantage of all that gift tax equivalent, up to the $11.7 million, then it's an issue. Otherwise, the pre-planning and the pre-thought that goes into that for most is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
It's non-existent. Mm-hmm. Now, they may also, in this case, Susan could say, well, I don't want to write a check. I want to give my daughter the appreciated stock. And that appreciated stock, let's say, is worth $50,000. Now, this is one thing you don't want the children to listen to this, where you may not want them to listen to this program. Can you see it? Daddy, did you hear that? you can give me more than $15,000 this year.
Yes. I know. I mean, I'm just so glad that my parents are faithful listeners to this program. And my extended
Daddy.
Family. Anyone listening.
Dad, did you hear
me?
That? Yeah. Okay. So, let's say the same Susan we're referencing has a stock that's appreciated $250,000, and she doesn't want to pay the gain. She wants her daughter, in this case, to pay the gain because her daughter has a lower tax bracket. Could that work?
It does, because when you gift something, you gift the actual item and all the tax attributes that come along with it. That's the fancy way of saying it.
You bet.
And from a estate consideration, that sometimes is a negative thing. But in this case, it's a positive thing because, again, let's go to that stock that you got from grandma that has a basis of a dollar and it's worth $60 now. When you gift it, that goes to the next generation. Now, they may have to deal with it when they sell it, but you may want that because they are at a lower tax bracket. So when they turn around and sell it, you might be in the 37% tax bracket and they're in the 12%. I'm going to put my asterisk
here. So instead of selling the stock yourself and then giving the dollars, consider giving the appreciated stock not just to the charity, but to your child as well.
Correct.
If that's part of the equation.
And I do want to add my asterisks and stars and the caveats with this one of saying that there is kiddie tax implications and you got to pull it back into the universal. But other
to
than
what
that,
age? To what age is kiddie tax applicable?
18 right now, 17 yeah. or 18.
Okay. So 18. For when we're talking yeah. adult children, rather,
yeah.
it's not really an issue.
Yeah. And there are lots of what you're bringing up here is the idea of tax planning as a family versus individual. So there's another mind-blown consideration is you when you're looking at tax planning, it's not just the one family, it's the multiple generations that are there, and how do you shift? Because sometimes the parents are in a lower tax bracket than the kids because if they're higher earners and double income, we don't want to do that. But if other times, if they're in the opposite side and they're lower, it's a fantastic tool that can be used, especially when we're looking at whether this estate tax is going to go down and all
right.
those different scenarios.
Yes, which it most likely will be. Right. So in the world of possibly increasing taxes, obviously all these tax planning strategies can make a huge difference over time. You're not only giving to charity, perhaps you're giving to your children, perhaps you're thinking about that appreciated real estate. Well, how could I give that all at once? You don't have to. Mm-hmm. There are other ways we can you can discuss with your tax advisor in advanced giving strategies, possibly into the future.
The most common example of this is farmland. Farmland mm-hmm. passes generation to generation to generation to generation, and there's no taxes that are ever paid on it, because when you're gifting the appreciated stock, that it's not a taxable event
in that particular farm,
right? Correct. Or land or whatever, so it just sits there and it just, so yes, we have a basis of a dollar because it started back in 1800 when we got the land for a dollar, and it might be worth anything. And so that's the key there, is that it just keeps passing on.
Awesome. So you're sort of looking at the family as a group, mm-hmm. and how can that group receive more of that money mm-hmm. overall and have the government get mm-hmm. less. So
correct.
Keeping more of the hard work yep. By using a strategy over multiple people.
These greedy capitalists are all the same, Ron, aren't they?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
It's just efficient, Dennis. It's efficient.
Yes. It's efficiency. Thank you. Now, do we have time for the Shea Stance here, Ron?
Yes, we do.
Awesome.
I've got a lot. So how about we do a few and then go to break and then come back?
Great. Let's do that.
How about that? All right. So, Heidi, you really wanted me to read this stat, so that means you have to weigh in on it, okay?
All right.
Just over 40 years ago, the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury note closed at an all-time peak of 15.84%. The yield on the 10-year Treasury note closed on November 12th, 2021 at 1.583%. The all-time closing yield on the 10-year Treasury note was 0.501% set on March 9th of 2020, and that's from the Treasury Department.
So March of 2020, the all-time low was 0.5% on the 10-year Treasury. Is that what that's saying?
0.501%.
Wow, 0.5.
So
such a stark difference. And, you know, we've had low interest rates for so long that we forget
yes.
how high they were at one point.
So can I jump in here off of that stat and say one of the most simple and straightforward and easiest estate tax gifting plan we can do is gifting just straight loans, not gifting a loan, but utilizing loans within that, particularly within this interest rate. So the IRS is going to say, if you do a loan, you have to charge an interest rate. You have to make it be realistic. Well, if the interest rate is 15%, is a very different scenario than at 1.
Correct.
Or would you say 1.5 right now? So it was at 0.5, now it's at 1. Yeah.
And
it's ish. I mean, we're talking about relatively much lower. Well, you can lock into that rate at a really low rate here. Capitalize on that, Jay's hat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
I like
when you're
it.
Thinking about the gifting awesome within stuff. Generations, utilizing a loan is a wonderfully powerful tool.
I actually have several friends whose parents or grandparents have done that for them, so they can get started in a business or buying a home or whatever they're doing. So
obviously, the other part of this gifting thing is that you get to see how they manage that money.
It's a test.
It's a test. How are they going to handle it?
Yeah, because then you can always ask for it. You can always ask for it back. So it's great because if you're preserving for divorces or other things, if you want, if you're concerned about, okay, well, what happens if I'm 95 and I go into the nursing home? It preserves the ability to get some of that money back, but it also allows for the appreciation from that point on to stay outside of the estate.
Right.
So
we had that question the other day of a client. So great point there, John. All right, Shay.
Here's another one. 68% of American workers in the private sector worked for employers that provided retirement benefits. That's of March, this last March, 2021.
75% of the private sector workers who had an option to participate elected to do so. So that's pretty cool. And that's from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. Be awesome if that got to 100%.
Yeah, it's still a great stat.
Cool. All right, let's do one more before we go to break. Of course, retirement planners will love this. John, you might too. The 401k individual pre-tax contribution limit will be $20,500 in 2022, up from $17,000 in 2012, or 10 years earlier. And the same inflation adjustments that have occurred over the last 10 years repeat over the next decade. The 401k individual pre-tax contribution limit will be $24,721 in 2032, and that's from the IRS.
Okay, so 10 years ago, the maximum that one could contribute was $17,000. Mm-hmm, is that what you said?
Yep.
And now it's $20,500.
Next year, 2021 is $19,500.
Yeah. Well, it just shows inflation affects more things than just the prices that we pay at the store. So.
Yes, indeed. Now, the there's one piece missing there, I think. Oh, these the amounts, excuse me, the amounts, the maximum amounts that one can contribute if over the age of 50 is actually was 26,000 in 2021. So that amount having gone to 20,500 will mean that it'll be $27,000. In 2022 that someone age 50 or older can contribute to a 401k. Awesome. Great.
All right, I'll give you one more stat that I really love, even though I have like five more and we're running out of time. So the price of imported industrial supplies and materials coming into the U.S. has increased 28% from just prior to the pandemic. And the industrial supplies and materials include paper, building materials, and metals used in other durable goods. All these items are key components in the U.S. supply chain, impacting the price of thousands of finished products in our economy. And that's from the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. So, you know, you go to Home Depot when you go to buy the same thing you bought 3 weeks ago. It's kind of crazy right now.
It's certainly absolutely is. Crazy, yes. Yes, indeed.
But there's a little bit of an explanation.
Mm-hmm. Lots more demand. More demand, and boy, it's just a supply chain being strained at every point, it seems like. You bet. Heidi.
Yes, I had an announcement today. We have talked recently about Social Security COLA will be 5.9% the payments going up, but Medicare B premiums are going to be rising 14.5%. So the 14.5% Medicare B, Part B increase is the largest in the program's history. And so just another domino in that inflation story, I think.
So the regular Medicare premium for 21 was $145 a month, and it's going to go to what level?
It was $148.50.
Oh, $148, okay.
And it's going to go to $170.1, so $170.10.
Whoa, okay. So everyone will be noticing that in 22 then.
Correct.
The higher Medicare premium coming directly from their Social Security benefit before they receive it.
I joke, and it's really not a joke, but as we're going through our business, our clients, or even individuals as we're looking at increases, it's sad that in the medical world that we get excited when it's only a 10% increase. Whereas everything else, we want to have, you know, a 2% mm-hmm. increase per year. For medical, it's we get excited when it's only 10%.
Yeah, because it's been such an ongoing thing. So. You bet. Now, has the maximum amounts that one can be charged for Medicare premiums gone up as well? Oh, you do have those numbers.
Ah.
So for those of who have significant incomes in 21, your Medicare premiums can come up to a maximum of $578 a month. So you want to be aware of that. If you're considering doing a Roth conversion or you've had significant business interests that have liquidated, causing your modified adjusted gross income to go up, then your premiums for Medicare can also go up to about four times the 170 limit to about $578 a month.
But that premium is determined from your income 2 years previously.
Right. So it'll be 2 years before you see that increase.
Mm-hmm. Right. So that's just something to keep in mind.
And what you're talking about is the planning, that it's more than just income tax that you got to think about. There's multiple different types of tax and multiple ramifications, such as Medicare, that when you go to tax plan, you got to be very careful on these items.
You bet.
There's so many ways they can tax us.
Yes.
All right. How much more time do we have here, Ron, just for clarity? About 2 minutes.
Dose.
So the CARES Act we've talked about and giving making charitable deductible gifts, if you will. But there also is a carry forward if you can't take full advantage of a charitable gift.
Correct.
Discuss what that is.
You're able to carry forward. So if you're not, if you get limited by either the 100% or the 60% or the 30% or whatever phase particular percentage is that you're limited on being able to take deductions, most likely where this comes in is, say your income is, so you have a loss from a business and your income is actually zero. You're able to carry forward any contributions into the future years, so you're allowed to carry that forward, both for corporations and individuals.
Which most people don't realize. I was surprised at this. Most of us in the financial planning community know that you can carry forward a loss, but to carry forward a gift because you haven't been able to deduct it to 5 years is very interesting.
We see that most commonly is when you have businesses that have significant losses, like a planned loss. Maybe you do a change in election. We saw this a lot with when the Trump plan came through and they allowed a lot of one-time specific tax things that came through, that you're able to make a boom in immediate adjustment, accelerated depreciation, things like that, where it drives your income way lower than typical in the phases and carries forward. So,
all right. Do we have enough time to discuss the donor advised fund, or is that for another time?
That's for another time, I think.
All right.
Knowing you guys.
Yes, so much fun we need stuff to talk about.
To get a hold of John Sluice, you call what number, John?
231-935-1590.
And to get a hold of Prop Financial Design, 947-3992. And remember, every first meeting with us is complimentary. So call Beth Howard. She's at our front desk now, and she will get you scheduled.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.